exciting things happening, and we have them here on the program today, two of the biggest stories on the climate change front. We are genuinely thrilled to welcome two guests that have done some really important research, one showing some positive news that Americans are finally beginning to connect the dots between all this recent meteorological madness and the arrival of climate change here in these United States. Supposedly United States, sometimes it doesn't feel that way, red versus blue, but really we should all get together around the green challenges we face. Now, that link is strengthening despite new research showing that network news coverage is declining when it comes to covering the biggest story of this century. We'll talk to Media Matters about their latest data showing the broadcast networks are decreasing their coverage and not doing a very good job at all of reporting on the science, politics, and practical impacts of an altered ecosystem, courtesy of climate change, caused, of course, by us, we humans, like it or not, Fox News and other blowhards. And speaking of hot air, Media Matters really put things in perspective by charting how many times the networks mentioned Donald Trump versus climate change, and of course he trumped the real news with real impact for all of us. What's wrong with this picture? We'll get into that a little bit. And in our last segment, in honor of Earth Week, we'll talk to Catriona McGregor. She's an author, an educator, and strong advocate for getting us outside more. She says the average American spends less than an hour per week outdoors, and she says no wonder we have twin epidemics in this country of obesity and nature deficit disorder. She'll tell us what we can all do to get off our gasses. First up, pleased and honored to welcome Dr. Anthony Lazarowicz to the program. He is the lead researcher on the latest findings regarding extreme weather, climate change, Americans' attitudes about the connection therein. Welcome. Can I just call you Tony?
Sure, absolutely. Thanks, Betsy. It's a great pleasure to be with you.
Oh, it's really an honor to have you on the show. I've been, you know, following your research there at Yale University and also George Mason University. You're both doing such a great job of covering climate change communications, what's too much been a case of lack thereof. The news today is getting a little better when it comes to Americans, regardless of what's going on in mainstream media coverage, starting to connect the dots. I guess we could say it's pretty hard to ignore what's been happening with our weather.
So, yeah, we have been, of course, the United States over the past 2 years has just experienced a seemingly endless sequence of extreme weather events and natural disasters. I mean, the record-setting temperatures of last summer, the incredibly unusually warm winter, and in fact, that's still continuing to this day, the droughts that we went through in Texas and Oklahoma, historic droughts, the Mississippi River floods of last year, Hurricane Irene, and so on, and not even to mention the tornado experiences we've gone through. And these are just horrific tragedies that are, of course, we had $14 billion disasters last year. That's an all-time record in the United States.
That was about an average of $1 billion per, just to put it in perspective.
And in total, it was about $53 billion in damages. But, of course, that pales in significance with all the lives that are lost and the families and communities that are ripped apart by these events.
Exactly.
So what we were interested to know is, first of all, to what extent have Americans, you know, had direct personal experience with these kinds of extreme events? How much have they been harmed by these events over the past year? And importantly, how are they interpreting them? You know, are they, in a sense, trying to think of them or connecting them to broader processes going on, like climate change? So what we found in this latest survey, and we've been conducting national surveys for over a dozen years now, and I'll talk more about that in a moment, but what we found in this survey, just conducted in March, was that more than 8 out of 10 Americans, more than 80%, say that they personally experienced in the past year an extreme weather event or a natural disaster. 8 out of 10 Americans. So, you know, all those maps that many of your listeners have probably seen, just showing, you know, where all the tornadoes have occurred and where the wildfires have occurred and where the floods and the hurricanes and so on, well, that has stretched across most of the country. And perhaps unsurprisingly, we're hearing from the American people that they, too, say that they've been directly experiencing these. In addition to that, more than a third of American respondents said that they were personally harmed either a great deal or a moderate amount by these events. So I have to say, you know, personally, I was surprised at how many people say they've experienced these events. And then also, what a substantial proportion of Americans say that they've incurred some significant damages as a result. I mean, this is millions and millions of Americans.
Absolutely. I want to welcome D.R. Tucker is joining us right now, Tony. He is a Republican climate convert. You probably know about him, as he certainly knows about your great work. He joins me on the program whenever he can, and he adds a really important perspective, because he was one who was skeptical of climate change realities until he actually read the science, and now is, I think, even a more passionate advocate than I am. I didn't know that was possible. Welcome, D.R.
Yes. Good afternoon, Betsy, and also good afternoon, Tony. Afternoon where I'm located currently. Tony, in the new study, is there any indication of what Americans want to have done to reduce, to combat global warming, to reduce greenhouse gas emissions? I understand there is an increased awareness of it, but awareness without action results in the sort of inaction that will worsen things. So is there any indication of what Americans want to do policy-wise?
Sure, great question. We actually have asked a whole series of questions about that. We just haven't analyzed or released those results. So I would say, you know, stay tuned. We will have those results out in the next week, probably.
Okay.
But what I can say is, in relation, now again, we just did a survey very similar to this back in November, and we've been tracking American views for quite a while. And what we've consistently seen is that Americans do overwhelming support for a number of climate and energy-related policies. And this is Democrats and Republicans, liberals and conservatives, for instance, strong support for a major national investment in clean energy. I mean, everybody likes clean energy. I mean, we've gotten 90% of Americans say they would support more investments in clean energy. Yes, speaking as a researcher, I have to say it's hard to design a question in which you can get such positive response. I mean, I dare say if I asked Americans, do you like apple pie or love your mother, it would be hard to get these kinds of responses. So,
and yet it's hard to believe that there's been criticism of the Volt, you know, Chevy, an all-American company coming out with an electric car.
Yes, that's the problem. Some people don't like clean energy. And some of them have political power. That's the issue.
That's right. And also, you know, as we've also identified in our work, we recognize that there is no such thing as the American people, even though we often talk about it that way. Our work has identified what we call six Americas. And these are six very different audiences within the United States that each respond to this issue in a very different way. And one of those is the group that we've labeled the dismissive. This is about 10% of the public. These are the people who are convinced that it's absolutely not happening, it's not human caused, it's not a serious problem. And many of them are what we would call conspiracy theorists. They say it's a hoax, it's scientists making up data, it's a UN plot to take away American sovereignty, and so on. They're a very vocal group. They are very vocal. And they have had, but importantly to recognize, they're 10% of the public. And yet their influence has been way bigger than that 10%. I mean, as you've mentioned, they're well represented in the halls of Congress. Mm-hmm. They have some good allies, and they've been a pretty effective force in terms of communicating their point of view. But it's important to recognize that that's only about 10% of the public.
Yeah, they just are a vocal minority and have, of course, mouthpieces and friends in Fox Network and 95% of all talk radio shows, a problem we discuss here often. So with this 2-1 margin, with the public saying the weather has definitely been getting worse and more people beginning to see that this could indeed be what scientists have been saying, this is climate change arrived on our shores, does this, in fact, open up a new window on, you know, some public opinion and policy discussion on what to do, which, of course, is what DR was just, you know, looking at with his question? And what are you planning to do at Yale to sort of take advantage, if you will, of this new connection while, you know, the nation has, you know, kind of a short-term attention span is focusing on this?
So this is a great question, Betsy. So what our research has shown over a decade is that for many Americans, they've always seen climate change as a distant problem, distant in time, that the impacts wouldn't be felt for a generation or more, and distant in space, that this is about polar bears or poor people in Bangladesh, not the United States, not my state, not my community, not my friends and family, or any of the people and places that I care about. So for many Americans, it's this big issue that's out there, and, you know, we'll stick that on the back burner, maybe we'll deal with it later, but it doesn't seem like it's really about us here and now. What this long series of record-setting extreme weather events seems to be doing, at least in the minds of some Americans, is beginning to, they're beginning to internalize the issue. They're beginning to sense, wait a second, maybe this isn't just about polar bears. Maybe this is about the kinds of things that we're experiencing right here in this country, either personally or what we're seeing play out on our television screens in a seemingly unending series. And so, and it's happening now. And so what we think is that, again, most people, I mean, Tip O'Neill, former Speaker of the House, once quipped that, you know, all politics is local. And we know that most Americans really are local. They don't spend a lot of time thinking about international news. They, you know, they don't follow international affairs that much. And so when we talk about global warming, global climate change, you're already using a frame of reference that most people just don't spend that much time thinking about because we mostly live in our own communities. What weather events begins to do is it opens up what we might call teachable moments, these moments when the nation's attention suddenly takes a look at this. I mean, media attention, we were just talking about media attention to climate change as an issue has dropped dramatically. Well, media attention to extreme weather events has soared in the past couple of years. And quite easily to understand, everybody wants to know about what is going on in the weather and the extreme circumstances that we are experiencing. So it's got people's attention because it's about something about where they live.
And we want to make a distinction always between mainstream media and those of us who have been connecting the dots for years now, trying to, you know, get mainstream attention for these very real connections.
Sure.
And that's hopefully going to change because it has to. I mean, how long can meteorologists and, you know, network reporters just ignore the what I call the green elephant in the room?
Well, I think actually the broadcast meteorology community is a really interesting case in point. We've actually studied, you know, done surveys of the entire community a couple times. And just like the six Americas I was just talking about, we see that broadcast meteorologists cannot be thought of as a single group either. There are a lot of broadcast meteorologists who are firmly convinced by the scientific evidence, who think this is a serious and urgent problem, and are ready and willing to begin to reach out and engage with their viewers to educate them about this. On the other hand, there's also another group that are still kind of trying to make up their mind. They're saying, well, yeah, I'm not a climate scientist. I don't really understand all the details. I'd like to learn more. And then there's a few that, again, are very high profile, that have taken very public national stances trying to call the entire edifice of climate science into question. And so, you know, even that community, you'll see diversities of opinion.
Tony, is there any indication in your polling that people will vote in upcoming elections with climate change in mind?
Yeah, that's a great question. So what we have also consistently found, and this isn't just us, this is, you know, everyone else, Gallup, Pew, et cetera, is that while many people are concerned about climate change has always been at pretty much at the bottom of public priorities. It's always around, say, 19 or 20 out of 19 or 20 issues. And again, that's in no small part because, again, many people think of it as a distant problem. It's something that, you know, we'll get to that sometime in the future. Perhaps this is one of the things that beginning to talk about this issue in a new way, that it's not just this fight over the science. That's been one of the dominant narratives in the media. You know, yes, it's happening. No, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not. It's human. It's natural. You know, I've got 1,000 scientists. I have 2,000 scientists. You know, we all know these debates.
Or it's all political. It's just political. No, it's not. It's actually practical and scientific.
You know, I was just coming to that. So one is the scientific debate. Second is that this is an environmental issue. In other words, and I don't mean to pick on this species, but it's about polar bears. It's not about people.
And penguins.
And third, that it's a political struggle between Democrats and Republicans. And, you know, from a scientific standpoint, that's one of the ones that, you know, I think makes many of us tear our hair out because, you know, the climate system doesn't care whether you're a Democrat or Republican. It just doesn't. You know, the floods are not going to only affect the Democratic households and not the Republican ones. It's not like wildfires are only going to, you know, burn down liberals' houses and not conservatives. We have to get beyond the political dysfunctionality of our current system to actually begin to address the real threats that this issue is going to face, not only now, but increasingly in the future.
The great exacerbator, the great equalizer, climate change is. And as people, you know, perish in some of these, you know, record destructive disasters, you know, one can only wonder, as DR and I do these people, these poor victims, and, you know, not just deaths, but, you know, just complete loss of, you know, property and livelihood, do they start to make the connections? And, you know, it hits the nation's heartland, it seems, some of these, you know, freak tornadoes and twisters and record heat waves in Texas, a state where the governor does not, quote, believe in climate change. You have to wonder, you know, are these, you know, patriotic Americans who might not be believers in climate change starting to connect the dots?
They may be, but here's also where we need to be careful. I mean, I really think that this is what this does is it opens the possibility of having a real conversation about this issue. Yeah, the two extremes will continue to throw rocks at each other and shout. But nonetheless, because it's about something that all of us experience, it at least provides a window for us to actually talk about what do we know about the relationship between climate change and extreme weather events. In some cases, that scientific link is pretty strong. I mean, the relationship between climate change and, for instance, record-setting temperatures of like this past winter, that long season of record-setting temperatures, is a stronger kind of connection than, say, the connection between climate change and tornadoes, which are, you know, very localized. They're very small and localized in both time and space. That connection between how climate change is going to affect tornadoes, that's something where we still have a fair amount of scientific uncertainty. But that's an important conversation to have, and here's the key point. We also find in our survey that only about a third of Americans have an emergency plan or an emergency survival kit in their home, okay, which really is just to underscore the point that as a nation, as households and as states, as communities, as a nation as a whole, we are still not adequately prepared for the impacts of a changing climate, regardless of whether it's human or natural caused. Okay? And we've all experienced the fact in recent years what happens when these systems that we all depend on go down. They turn out not to be as resilient and as hardened as we might expect. I mean, Hurricane Irene came up the East Coast last year, and, you know, here in Connecticut, you know, people were without power for 10 days. Mm. I mean, people felt that. They suddenly realized this electric system that we all depend on is not as invulnerable as many of us assume. So we have a lot of work to do in this society to get ready.
And not a lot of time.
Well, I mean, this is an issue that's going to play out over many decades. That doesn't mean that you could just put it off until the distant future. But it's a conversation that we need to start having right now.
Exactly. I mean, I say that not a lot of time because there are some people who are already, you know, worried about pessimism setting in. Well, it's too late, you know, just as we finally get the attention of the public, you know, some people are tuning out because they, you know, feel like we're, you know, just one person, just one community, just one country, and what's out there in the atmosphere, the CO2 is going to be there for, you know, 50 to 100 years, they're saying, so why bother? What do we need to do to fight that kind of challenge?
Yeah, I hear that sometimes, and I don't frankly understand it, because here's the analogy I would use. There's a really, I mean, and they're right, there is a lot of CO2 already in the atmosphere. We've already warmed a significant degree. Even if we stopped all CO2 emissions today, we will still see additional warming, and we will still see some additional impact. So that's true. There is, impacts are locked into the system. But there's a huge difference between, let's say you're driving a car, hitting a wall at 5 miles an hour versus hitting that same wall at 50 miles an hour, okay? You know, you hit a wall at 5 miles an hour without the seatbelts on, to continue the metaphor, you know, you're going to suffer maybe some whiplash, some minor bumps and scrapes. You can certainly dent your car. But if you hit it at 50 miles an hour, you're talking about serious damage. And that's our choice. It's not about no impacts or big impacts. It's about how much are we willing to deal or to reduce our emissions now so we reduce our ultimate impacts and our ultimate risk in the future.
Talking about serious damage, and of course that's what the networks are not doing, maybe reporting on the damage but not the connections, and that's what we're going to talk about in the next segment. I want to respect your time. I know you stepped out of a meeting to talk to us, Tony, officially Dr. Anthony Lazarowitz of Yale University. Thank you so much for your fabulous work, and we'll have you on, I hope, in the next few weeks when you get that further research ready to release.
Okay, well, thanks for having me, Betsy.
Okay, talk soon, and D.R. Tucker and I are pleased to now welcome to the show Jocelyn Fong. She is with Media Matters, and she is the person there who covers climate and environmental issues, and what they're finding is course, especially interesting in light of more Americans are beginning to connect the dots, but apparently the news managers, people who decide the news of the day and how it's covered, not necessarily connecting the dots because the broadcast networks are declining in the way and number of times that they cover climate change between 2009 and 2011 specifically, while at the same time they cover, oh, people like Donald Trump talking about all kinds of nonsense. So hopefully we have Jocelyn Fong on the line now.